This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Special Edition Batman The Long Halloween Part 2.
How lucky can one guy be? I kissed her and she kissed me. Like the fella once said, ain't that a kick in the head? The room was completely black. I hugged her and she hugged back. Like the sailor said, quote.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Special Edition, Batman The Long Halloween, Part 2. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Paul Montgomery.
Trick or treat again.
And we are representing the Animated Brain Trust, our third leg of the tripod. Dr. Ryan Haupt has family obligations and could not make the show. We are sorry to not have him, as we always enjoy having him on the show.
Absolutely.
This is part two. We talked about Batman Long Halloween part one just about a month ago, which is unusual for these films.
Yeah.
It's the same deal as before. This is the adaptation of the Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale classic Batman. It's not a miniseries. It's a maxi series, I guess. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
Directed by Chris Palmer, written by Tim Sheridan, who writes a lot of these films. And Paul, this is what number film is this?
So this is either 42 or 43.
Well,
they're apparently going to release these two movies as one movie, or I don't know if maybe a two-pack, or I don't know how it's going to work. Mm-hmm. But next year they're going to re-release these, I guess, and they're calling this as a whole film number 42.
That's a cheat.
It is.
We'll see if it actually comes.
But then it throws everything into whack because, like you said, they've had other two-parters in the past. So are they counting those as two or as one? Like Death of Superman, Reign of the Superman.
Dark Knight Returns.
Dark Knight Returns.
We need to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah.
So, spoilers, obviously, for the movie and the comic, because we have to compare them. For the first film, I had read the commensurate chapters of the comic. It was the first four chapters of the, was it 13 parts, I think the comic was?
Okay, I'll look
but
that up.
I did not read for the second one. Just didn't have the time. So that was
interesting. I think that's where they made the changes.
Yeah, so, and if you recall from about a month ago, I don't think we loved the first part, right?
No.
You and I loved it less than Ryan did.
Yeah, that's true. He was more enthusiastic about it. There were things I certainly liked about
yes.
it. I thought it was well made. I just felt like there were some pacing issues, and my thing was I was stuck on being burnout on Mafia stories and Batman and like the Two-Face story.
So we didn't. I think we gave it in the two range. I don't. I honestly don't remember what our numbers were. But you and I didn't love it. I remember that. Yeah. I loved this one.
So did I.
This was terrific. This almost works as a standalone film. You really only thing you don't know is about the Holiday Killer, which again is such a minor point in the story. It doesn't really matter. I found myself thinking, well, geez, if you take out the Holiday Killer, do you really lose anything? But I thought this was terrific on all fronts.
Yeah.
I thought this was exciting. It was heartfelt. It had great characterization stuff. It had surprises. It had
the
great
performances
moments.
Performances were better, even though it's the same people.
Batman wasn't an asshole bully in this one. Like it was like a whole new movie.
Visually, it was, I think visually it's, you know, it's not like it's a huge step up from the previous one, but I think because I enjoyed all the other things, all the other elements of it, I really appreciated the, you know, I love the backgrounds in this movie. Yes. And if you compare it to something like, I think we have, you know, ruby colored glasses for things like Mask of the Phantasm. But if you go back and look at that, like, I mean, they re-released that in HD and stuff in recent years, which I believe we reviewed.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. That looks so much better in my memory than it does when you actually, you know, and this, I think, is just really polished. I think it's one of the best looking, best sounding productions that they've done.
Well, that's the thing, right, is that we talked about this last time, they can't recreate Tim Sale. The art is too idiosyncratic. Right. But what they can do is they can make it really moody, and they can sort of make a tribute to that part of his art. So the backgrounds they look painted. Obviously, they're not hand-painted, but they look it. And it just has a real distinctive look. I loved the way the film looked. I loved the way Batman looks. He has a very sort of Darwin Cook in the New Frontier look to him. The character designs are all really great in this. Mm-hmm. It was very classic Batman. It's funny because you mentioned at the top of the show that one of the reasons why you didn't like the first part was that you're sort of sick of Batman and the Mafia and Batman and Two-Face. But, I mean, I thought Two-Face in this was terrific. I thought Josh Duhamel was great in this as Two-Face.
Really strong. Like, I was not particularly a fan of Josh Duhamel before this, but watching this, I think he does a really great nuanced performance as both Harvey and Two-Face. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I watched this the same day that I read the first Batman 89 comic.
Right.
Which is also a great take on Two-Face.
Mm-hmm. You're having a Two-Face essence.
And I was like, okay, I'm eating all my words from before. There actually is a way to tell this story in a new, interesting way.
Well, I like that we got sort of the classic Two-Face origin, even if they tweaked it slightly. But, you know, it's been a while since he's gotten acid thrown on his face in a courtroom. Mm-hmm. To differ from you, I love this era of Batman, this early period of his career where he's fighting the Mafia as much as he's fighting, you know, the Joker. We don't really get these days, you know, it's mostly all about the giant villains. And so I like this period. It's like the Batman Begins period, you know, where the old guard is ending, the old guard being the Mafia families.
I do like that stuff in theory. It just, they've gone to that well a lot.
I just like the Maronis and, you know, the other families. I can't think. The Falconis.
The Falconis. I think this is my new favorite Mafia movie.
Wow. All right.
Because it's got the Batman in it.
You know, it opens up, Batman's under the thrall of Poison Ivy for a few months, and he is signing over his businesses to her, just like they were trying to do with the Maronis, or the Falconis. The Falconis. There's too many Mafia families. Catwoman saves the day, and that leads to lots of things happening. There's the Mafia families. There's the holiday killer, sort of. There is all the villains coming together. There's Two-Face that happens once he gets the acid thrown in his face at the trial. That shit changes Gotham. It makes sense when you think about it that Two-Face would kind of lead the villains because he understands not just the criminal side of the city, but also the law enforcement side and the courts. And he's probably smarter than the other one. You know, like, it just makes sense that Two-Face would sort of slide into that role.
When you think about it, it's kind of just happenstance that, well, not happenstance, there was a lot of good work put into it, that the Joker became Batman's arch nemesis.
Right.
But there are so many other great arch foe dynamics that the Batman has. Just based on, like, on paper, like, by concept, you'd think, like, Scarecrow maybe would be his ultimate, you know, arch nemesis because of the fear thing. But then, like, Two-Face, the duality, and just having them be allies first, friends first, and then going into this tragedy, this real tragedy. And, of course, you got Ra's al Ghul and, you know, characters like that. But it was cool to see the Joker in this movie, but he doesn't even have any lines.
And that was what I really liked about it. You know, the first one, one of my criticisms was the Joker felt like he came in and took over the film, where here he shows up, but he's basically not really a factor in it. He does a couple of things in the big fight at the end, but it's mostly a Two-Face story. And also, it allows room for Scarecrow, and allows room for Mad Hatter, and Poison Ivy, and Catwoman. So you get a lot more, and, you know, Calendar Man a little bit, but you get a lot more of the villain, and Solomon Grundy. There's a lot more villainy going on here than just Two-Face. I mean, just
and last time I complained about, you know, it's like, is the Solomon Grundy thing going anywhere? Like, in this adaptation, like, is there any reason for it? It just felt like it didn't belong. And they made it cohesive, and it worked that he was in there. And it's, I think it's tying him in with Two-Face and the fall of Harvey Dent and having him usher in this new kind of justice, this new way that he looks at justice. And he's such an interesting character because by the end, he basically just turns himself in.
Yeah.
He allows himself to be arrested and taken away. And it's a longer story than that.
There's some things I didn't like. I mean, I liked it for the most part. I really liked this a lot. I really enjoyed watching. We were talking about the show about how I usually try to take notes during the movie, but at a certain point I just stopped because I got so involved in the movie. I didn't want to look down at my phone and type away notes. I was enthralled. So it's terrific. I don't want to take that away. There are a couple of things my little thing is just the way the characters are portrayed. I thought Thomas Wayne in the flashback was too old.
Okay.
He seemed like Bruce's grandfather more than his father.
Mm-hmm.
Although it did allow for a brief glimpse of black-haired Alfred, which I loved.
Yeah.
You know, they flash back to see that Thomas Wayne is sort of tied into the mob families. And I don't love that necessarily. You know, the impulse to go back and mess with his family is one I never like. I hate when they change the origin to make it like Thomas Wayne was targeted. It takes away, to me, the idea that the tragedy of it being a random street crime is what drives Batman, and not that there was a conspiracy to kill Thomas Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
Because that way, theoretically, Batman could destroy the conspiracy and be fulfilled. He can never stop random street crime. That's the tragedy of Batman.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, what I've said the whole time is I think that the irony of this is that the holiday killer is almost irrelevant to the story. And then the ending is totally different than the book. And I thought the book's ending was stronger, leaving it as a mystery that Batman never solved, as opposed to making him sort of complicit in letting her escape.
Yeah.
And getting rid of the two killers, just having the one killer, and so it doesn't make sense when we've seen Holiday before.
Right.
Giant man, suddenly it's just Gilda. So I didn't love that part.
I didn't hate it. I don't think it's an improvement
on
the original. I definitely like the idea of having this early mystery in Batman's career that he never solved.
Right. It's much more interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's much more, I think, interesting to have him outsmarted by Harvey's wife. So they changed also the entire motivation for the killings.
Mm-hmm.
In the first movie, Harvey's never home. He's never sees his wife. They're trying to have kids, but he's never around. In the book, she basically starts killing the mobsters in the hopes that it'll lighten his daily load of casework. He'll be able to spend more time with her. It's a very, you know, like, mentally ill thing. And here, it's a revenge because she was in love with... What was the son's name? Michael Corleone. He was in love with the son. And they were pregnant. The family made them break up. And the implications made her have an abortion, even though they don't say it out loud, really.
Alberto Falcone.
This is a revenge killing. So,
yeah. Afterwards, I'm just, you know, thinking about it. I'm like, okay, I know this is different from the original. Does it still make sense? And I don't necessarily know that they laid enough pipe to explain why she would kill Alberto.
Right.
Like, I guess that would make sense. Killings.
Right.
I mean, this makes it much more personal.
Sure.
Their whole relationship, but some of the extraneous killings then don't make as much sense.
Yeah. If there's one negative to this entire affair, I think, again, it is the holiday killings. I think they messed around too much with them, and they removed them from the story enough where you almost forget that they're around. And then when they happen, there's no impact. And then when they reveal the killer and the motive, you're just like, okay.
Is the Catwoman thing part of the book, that her being an illegitimate daughter?
Oh, the daughter?
I've
definitely seen that before. I mean, that is definitely one of... Yeah.
It's in the book?
I think so.
Or maybe like a later...
I don't know if it's in this one. I can't tell. Just slipping around. But it's definitely something they've explored before.
In the larger mythology. Yeah.
She's had like 15 different... origins.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't necessarily... Well, it could square with year one, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I feel like if I were doing the adaptation, I don't know that I would include that because it comes so late in the game.
Right. Why are you obsessed with this family?
Yeah. I liked Falcone's legitimate daughter.
Right. Yeah, she was cool. Listen, she wielded two machine guns.
Yeah, it's a great design.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great idea that she wants to be involved and...
She can't because she's a woman.
Can't because she's... Right, and he says, go, you know, buy yourself something, and yeah.
She was a good addition to this story. Like, everyone had an interesting little story or an arc or whatever. You know, everyone had a little interesting bit to play.
And I felt like this answered the promise of Titus Welliver playing that character.
Yes.
Because I felt like he was underutilized in the first one. And in this one, I think he had, you know, more going on.
Yeah, they all did. It just felt more meaty, the whole film. And I think that's partially just the downside of splitting these movies up into two is the first part doesn't feel fulfilling because there's no third act.
Right.
Whereas you're getting almost the whole story here. And that's not just a problem for this film. I mean, it's a problem for other things too, like even like Harry Potter, the seventh Harry Potter. Like the first one's just like whatever, but you know, because you don't you don't get any kind of three-act structure. So there's a part of you that's like, what happened?
Because those books and those movies are so built around like a school year.
Yeah.
It's like such a neat way to structure a movie. And right. Yeah, so having it split up. And the thing is, if they're going to fuse these two together, and I don't know if it's going to be like you select part one and you select part two, if there's like an intermission in it, or if it goes from, you know, the end of the first part right into the second part.
You sit through the credits.
With our pacing issues with the first, I would feel like it would be glacially paced. And I don't know if I would want to watch that. Honestly, to anybody who's listening who hasn't watched them and would want to, just start with part two. Like
you don't
I said
really
at the beginning,
need it.
I think
honestly,
you don't need the first part.
Again, like if you've never read this book before, you maybe can not know about the holiday killings, but it's sort of tangential to the story.
This and early on watching this movie, before I bought into it and realized that I really enjoyed it, They do the origin story again. And I'm like, God, the pearls in the alley again. And like, there's a reason for it.
Right.
But I'm like, why does it have to be in every adaptation of every Batman story ever? So even if like, is this your first Batman story? Are you unfamiliar with Batman as a concept? You could still watch this part and get his origin story.
Yeah. I mean, I just mean like, you know, the whole, I guess you don't really need the origin of Holiday. I don't know. It's a much better film. And it's just sort of flabbergasted at how much better it is than the first one. It's not like it's slightly better. So it's like a whole league better than the first part.
And it's not like different teams, right? No. It's like the same. It's the same director and the same. And so it's just basically just one big movie.
Yeah.
It's just the second half happens to be so much better.
Taken as a whole, again, I do think there are overall problems. Like, I think if you're doing The Long Halloween and you basically neglect the holiday murders, then it's just like, what's the point of doing The Long Halloween? Do another Batman story. But everything else happening around it is so good and interesting that it makes up for the fact that the central conceit of the story is sort of shoved to the side. But I get it. Like, are you going to focus on this shadowy murderer, or are you going to focus on Two-Face and the Joker? I understand why they did it.
The stuff at the boardwalk, is it the 4th of July, I guess?
Yes,
when the
fireworks.
When they see Falcone, and he comes up and he says hello to Harvey's wife, and you don't know the relationship at that point, you know, that she has a history with them. You just think that he's threatening. But then if you go back and watch it again, you're like, oh, yeah, right. They know each other very well, too well.
Right.
So that's why he made that point of just saying hello to her. And, like, you know, Harvey goes off. And, like, at that point, I'm sitting on the edge of my seat. I'm like, this is very tense. And, like, when, like, Harvey goes over the boardwalk to go after the hitman, you're like, oh, no, she's alone. Some other guy's going to go after her or something. And it's taught, you know, and it's pretty good stuff.
The first one felt long. This one didn't feel long.
No.
At all.
I was engaged with it. After I got to a certain point, I'm like, oh, this is actually really compelling. And I think this kind of rocketed to the top of my list.
I just love this Batman. He's still starting out. He's not fully formed. I just love this era of Batman. It's like early the animated series.
Even this Bruce Wayne is more interesting than he was in the previous one, because you get to see him playing it up, like playing the role of Bruce Wayne, you know, the playboy, and having a conversation with Harvey and Gordon at his house. And they've had so many other conversations with him, but they don't know that he's Batman. And them having such a different reaction to him.
That's, I laughed that's out loud when he offered them a drink, and Gordon was like, it's 8 a.m. And he just sort of shrugs and pours his own drink, which we know is not really alcohol anyway. I really liked it. I really, really did. I was surprised. I was sort of not looking forward to it because of how much we didn't like the first one.
Yeah, I was like, let's get this over with.
I think like 10 minutes in, I was like, do I love this? I think I love this. So, and I love, you know, there's a little bit of problems. I'm not going to give it a 5-star, but it was very, 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 very good.
Oh, man. Alfred with the trick-or-treaters and Bruce being like, Alfred, really? Like, nobody's coming up to Wayne Mansion to trick-or-treat until they do.
So let's talk about the post-credit sequence.
Was there a post-credit
sequence? Yes, there was a post-credit sequence. You may have missed it.
Did I see it? No.
So we were discussed in the last show whether or not this is part of the shared universe.
Oh, okay.
And it is. So this, I guess this is the version of Batman for this universe. And it's a great one, so I'm happy with
cool.
it. He sucked in the first part, but he was great in this part. There's another ring at the door, and Alfred goes to the door, and it's the Flash and Green Arrow.
Okay, definitely didn't see that.
And Alfred goes, "It's for you, sir." And I was like, wait a minute, do they know who Batman is?
Huh.
That was weird, but yeah, so this is sort of establishing the fact that it's the Flash from the Superman movie with the, you know, the weird, the chin thing, the suit.
Yeah.
And then a Green Arrow that we haven't seen yet, but looks like Green Arrow. So I guess we're building back up to whatever.
A Longbow Hunters movie would be cool.
I mean, yeah.
That could be neat.
Take out some of the more adult stuff in that, but for sure. So this week made me really sad that you didn't have the disc.
Uh-oh.
So, you know, I get the disc and I look at it's the special features and the showcase short is Blue Beetle.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, it's probably Jaime Reyes. And I put it in and it starts and it's not Jaime Reyes. It's Ted Kord done in a total 60s Hanna-Barbera style.
Oh.
With bad acting and bad sound effects and animation mistakes.
I'm getting the disc.
And he teams up with the Question to fight a cult. And then at some point, there's some more characters show up, and it becomes sort of like a winky-winky Watchmen thing, because, you know, you have Rorschach, and you have...
Right.
Night Owl, and I was not expecting it. Like, there's a whole theme song that goes on for a long time. I was like, wow! Somebody just said, fuck it, we're just doing Hanna-Barbera-style Blue Beetle, and I...
Nothing at all against the new Blue Beetle, but that sounds cool.
Just the style of it. It could have been any character, for all I care. I was not expecting them to do such a goofy... fun take on it, and I really, really enjoyed it. I was like, damn, Paul would really like this.
Any running along walls where they just repeat the texture over and over again?
Possibly, but there's definitely a part where the color's inverted for a second.
Oh, I gotta see this. Well, that's cool. There's more. The gift that keeps on giving.
And then I did watch a few minutes of the featurette for the next film, just cause, again, I didn't want to spoil it too much, but it's, as we talked about before, it's Injustice, the Tom Taylor adaptation of the video game. So now Josh and I just reviewed the first volume of Injustice for Booksplode. And it's a fun story. It's just that it's like offensively bad character designs and they're fully used in the movie. It's going to be really interesting. I don't, you know, the first volume we did was 400 something pages. I don't know how much they're going to do in a 70 to 80 movie.
Yeah, I enjoyed what I read of that. I haven't read the whole thing, but some of it was up on Comixology Unlimited for a bit, I think.
Right.
And I think that's when I read it. And I was like, yeah, this is cool. I wish it looked better, but...
Yeah,
this is a fun alternative, you know, thing. And there's really interesting ideas in it, like stuff that, like, you can't get away with in the, you know,
yeah, no, I definitely like the story. Interesting voice cast. Justin Hartley, who played Green Arrow on Smallville and is on This Is Us, is Superman. Anson Mount is Batman.
Okay.
And Kevin Pollak is both the Joker and Jonathan Kent, which I thought was interesting.
Whenever anybody says Anson, I know who Anson Mount is, but I always think of Anson Williams, the guy from Happy Days?
No, not Potsy. Not Potsy. Although that'd be really interesting, but it's not Potsy.
I always forget for a second, and I'm like, that's cool that he went on to, he directs TV, I think, or he did. I don't know.
But this is like a full cast, you know, it's like Superman, Batman, Robin, Nightwing, Green Lantern, Mr. Terrific, Aquaman, Harley Quinn, Mirror Master, so the Flash, it's everyone, you see them at least on screen, Green Arrow. So.
That could be fun.
It'll be interesting to see how they make one complete 80-minute story out of 425 pages. I mean, that's just the first part, there's like 3 years of it.
Yes.
Very curious how that's going to be adapted. Yeah, this was terrific. The short was terrific. I enjoyed watching the featurette. I was very happy after I finished my day of watching. I was like, this was great. I enjoyed all of
it. This was a real dark horse. We both went into it like, oh, okay. And at least I'll get to talk to the guys about it. And I was like, this is going to be a 3-minute podcast. Like, we're going to be like, it's still tedious.
No problem.
No, this is complete turnaround.
Yeah. So now it's interesting because we don't really know beyond Injustice. I would assume just based on previous release dates that Injustice will come out sometime in October.
Okay.
We don't really know what's happening beyond. Well, Paul, there'll be that release where they put all the shorts in one disc with a new long short. So you can watch Blue Beetle then.
Okay. I might get the disc for this. I don't know. I liked it.
It was really good.
I'll at least buy it digitally, you know, at some point.
So we don't know what 2022 will bring us. As far as I know, this is still going to keep going. We just don't know yet, but we'll be there when it happens. So let's do ratings on this. Ratings on Batman The Long Halloween, okay. Part 2 out of 5.
Purely Part 2.
Purely Part 2. I think I'm going to go 4.5.
That's what I was thinking.
It's higher than I was going to go, but I thought I was going to go 4.25, but I think I bumped it up a little bit.
I think it's fair. It's
my
free.
Problems are minor.
It's not like you only have so many fives you can give out.
Right.
Or 4.5s.
I'm only allowed 3 fives.
Yeah. Maybe if the first part didn't exist, I would give it a 5. But it's
I almost want to give it a 6 when I add a star for the Blue Beetle short, but I can't do that.
Okay. A 4 or 5. I think it's a really solid production.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun, honestly.
Maybe part of the tilt on this is just that we were so surprised by it.
I just think it's a better movie. I think it's better paced. I think it's better constructed. I think the script is tighter. I just think it's a better movie. And I think part of it is that, again, you only get the first act and a half in part one. But, yeah, I think it is.
And I like coming in on it, you know, in medias res with, like, in Bruce Wayne's fantasy dream world of being under the thrall of Poison Ivy.
Right.
And it's just been going on. And Catwoman comes in and breaks that spell. And that's a cool way to start the movie.
Yes, this is all very good. So if you for some reason are listening to this but didn't watch it because you didn't like part one, I would definitely go check it out. If you haven't seen any of these, you can probably skip part one and just jump into part two.
Oh, just got a text from Ryan. Hated it, he says. Dog food, garbage. Yeah. So
we'll be back later this year for Injustice on fanboy.com. Paul and I and a bunch of other people just reviewed The Suicide Squad. Previous to that, we reviewed Black Widow. You can find those special edition shows at fanboy.com, as well as our weekly Pick of the Week show. We talk about weekly comics and our Talksplode and Booksplode. The Booksplode is where we reviewed Injustice. There's all kinds of podcasts. There's a lot of them. We're at our breaking point, but we're doing them. It's all at Fanboy. And thanks, Paul, as always, for being part of the Brain Trust.
Thank you. And this one's dedicated to our buddy, Dr. Haupt.
Oh, we forgot to mention. I don't know if we have mentioned it before. I know we talked about it internally. I can't remember if we talked about it last time. But we are going to, as the Brain Trust, review the first season of Marvel's What If, the animated series on Disney Plus. I know that recently we announced on our Patreon that if we hit the next stretch goal, we'll unlock doing TV show special editions, which we haven't been doing. But we are, much like Invincible, going to review, as the Brain Trust, the first season of What If. So you can look forward to that whenever that ends this year, probably in about a month or so, 2 months. I think it's 8 or 9 episodes, something like that.
Sounds right.
So we'll be back for that. We'll be back for Injustice. And until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul. My head keeps spinning. I go to sleep and keep grinning. If this is just the beginning, my life is gonna be beautiful. I've sunshine enough to spread. It's just like the fella said. Tell me quick, ain't love a kick in the head.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.